This portion of Your Talk Show is brought to you by Bob's Custom Windows and Siding. For windows, seamless siding, and all sorts of doors, do like the jingle says. Call 756-0735. Your community. Your opinions. Your forum. This is Your Talk Show on WCLO. Opinions expressed on Your Talk Show are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of WCLO or Big Radio staff, management, or sponsors. The open phone and text line number is 608-752-4000. Now, here's the host of Your Talk Show, Tim Bremmel.
Welcome back to the program. Friday morning, 10 a.m. in the studio. 44th Assembly District Representative Ann Rowe. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you. Absolutely a pleasure.
It's been 3 months now, basically, since...
What?
You've been...
Well, yeah, active since January 6th.
January 6th, so not quite 3 months yet.
But, no.
How's it going?
Well, they're not wrong about the fact that it's like drinking from a fire hose. But I have decided, with no medical basis whatsoever, that this is my anti-aging strategy.
Ah.
So
most people would
just
say the opposite. But
no, I will just keep filling my brain, keep learning. And that's, yeah, that's my strategy so far. So.
All right. Well, as I know, there is a lot of stuff that gets talked about. Let's start with the budget. That's the big thing going on there right now. The governor released his plan. Most of the assembly and Senate representative released some statement in support or opposition of it. I believe yours was in support of it,
yes,
by and large. Is there anything within the budget that you saw that you question? I mean, I know the budget is the budget, and it's like, well, if 90% of it's good, do you have to live with 10% you don't like? Sometimes, yeah, you do. But is there anything in there that you question?
I think what is worrisome to all of us and should be on both sides is the uncertainty revolving around the federal movements. And as a result, I believe Governor Evers' budget is prudent.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're going after some big issues, but we have to be mindful that we may have to pivot very quickly, depending on what the federal budget does.
Yeah.
And so for that reason, I do support it. And I am glad that he, you know, and his team essentially have their heads on swivels trying to, you know, assess and accommodate all possible scenarios. And that's not an easy job.
No. The budget is a huge document. And there's a process. So we've talked about it a number of times already. So, like it or not, generally, if the governor is of a different party than the legislature, the governor's budget isn't going to look anything like it was first released as. I don't care, you know, who's in charge of what, but if you've got the split government, that's what tends to happen.
True.
And so there'll be a lot of picking apart of what Governor Evers proposes. Is it your impression, Ann, that the budget as the governor proposed it does pay for itself and is fully funded?
That is indeed my belief. And, you know, I am, as many will know, a middle-of-the-road Democrat. And so I put a lot of importance, a lot of emphasis on our numbers and doing the math. And I believe the math is there, again, with that eye towards the uncertainty looming mm-hmm. ahead. And what I'm particularly excited about with this budget is his emphasis on year of the kid, year of the child. And based on my entire career path, you know, being sort of focused, not sort of, but really primarily focused on the education and our young people, K through 12 and beyond, I like that emphasis because from a financial standpoint, proactive investment now is going to pay us dividends as we move through as a community and as a state. So intervening, making sure kids have access to a competitive, accessible education, K through 12 and beyond, whatever that pathway looks like post high school, and addressing mental health needs, addressing their hunger, their poverty levels, you know, sadly, any trauma that they have incurred, you know, or encountered. If we do that at the front end of their lives, of their young careers, I'll tell you, Tim, it's a heck of a lot less expensive making that investment then than taking a 40-year-old and trying to piece it back together again. So the economics are there for that proactive investment across the board. We know that things like childcare investment lifts the entire community. That means people go to work. That means business owners can do their thing. That is what makes an economy, you know, on a local and state level hum. So, yes, I think the numbers are there. I think the payback is there with that sort of prudent, proactive investment at the front end, with the idea that, you know, when you lift those groups, those families, those children, you really, you know, the numbers prove it. You're lifting the entire community.
Well, we've got a big challenge in the education area. And I'm many, many years removed from being in school. So I no longer have a clue what it's like in those hallways. And it's a very different world out there. So there's going to be things that funding is proposed for that I may not understand. I'm going to leave that largely to the experts who look at it. But I do think that there are areas where people look at education and they say, well, we've been increasing aid, not maybe to keep up with inflation now, but there hasn't been a flat number from the legislature. There's always been a little bit more going to a school district. And while that's been happening, test scores and results continue to fall, and where's the gap? In other words, I guess if I put it to a finer point, some people are not convinced that throwing money at this problem is going to improve educational outcomes, and maybe there's something more to it than that.
Well, you and I have a very collegiate, respectful relationship, so I'm going to push back on that one. Absolutely.
That's what you're here for.
So the systemic underfunding, and one might use the word defunding, mm-hmm. of our public education system over, you know, the last decade, if not more, has resulted in what we're seeing as far as the gaps. Okay, so there are socioeconomic factors outside the control of a school district, certainly. You know, those weigh in. Family dynamics weigh in. The pressures of trying to maintain, you know, family-supporting wages, that weighs in. You know, there are a lot of pressures being exerted on families with school-age kids, you know, pre-K and beyond. So if you take that aside and you look at the numbers, you know, the state, and this pains me to say it because now I'm part of it, we have not kept our promise to fund at least just one piece of education, that is special education. So, Tim, you know, what the governor is proposing and the investment in just special education alone means that we're keeping our promise as a state, which was to fund up to 60% of special education. If we had kept that promise this year, we would not have needed the operating referendum that the school district passed with the support of the community of Janesville. That alone. We wouldn't have needed.
Well, yeah, and that's a fair amount of, I don't know what the translates into dollar-wise, but we're about 50% 90? Of what we need to be if the state is following its commitment, right?
30%.
But I mean, we're funding about 30% right now, and we need to fund at least 60.
60.
Is that what, yeah.
60. I mean, that's a big number. And you think of the resources that means, more help in that classroom. You know, in my experience with the school district of Janesville as a consultant years ago, not that many years. However, I will tell you, there is not a single child that the school district cannot accommodate and educate with the resources. There are superheroes, and I'm not exaggerating, in every building we have. Truly. But they need those resources. And so while I am not a, you know, spend sort of person, those sorts of proactive investments, listening to our teachers and the people on the ground, you know, working with the kids, they're not asking for the sun and the moon. They're asking for those tools. And as far as the test scores and so forth, remember, those are snapshots, mm-hmm. right? Those are snapshots. But we do know that, you know, in my own experience, when I sit down to volunteer with kids in third grade math, that's about as far as I go, and then the questions get bigger, the difference when they have full tummies versus when I know they're hungry, you know, multiplication is a heck of a lot easier when you're not hungry. So those fundamental
Wait a
basics.
Minute. I can use that as an excuse
yes.
for all kinds
yes,
of other
you
things.
Can. Yes, you can.
I don't mean to minimize that.
No, food makes things a hell of a lot easier. Sorry, heck of a lot easier.
Right.
So, you know, so those sorts of, you know, observing in the classrooms, looking at, you know, how school districts can set kids up for maximum success. Those are the things they need. When we address those, you know, fundamental human needs of safety, shelter, you know, eating, food, things get a lot easier. And as a community, until we make sure that everybody is on that sort of level playing field and has that base, now let's watch you fly. Because you know what? No kid wakes up wanting to be that naughty child or wanting to be that hungry child or feeling left out because everybody else is getting something and they didn't have anything. Nobody wants to be that. And if we can lift that, then that child is going to jump as high as we let them. They will. They're going to reach those goals. And if we want to set higher goals for achievement and reading, go higher. And they will soar with that support.
You said the last time we spoke, I think, Anne, I asked you what was the number that would be a good number that we were kind of short here in our whole education system and, you know, just a guess. And you kind of suggested $4 billion.
sort of suggested.
Which, you know, I'm not going to hold anybody to it, but the government, or the governor now in his budget, I think the sum total that he's kind of pushing towards education is 3.2 or something like that. A little shorter than what you had initially suggested. Are you comfortable with that?
I am, because I'll tell you how that breaks down a little bit. And these numbers get, you know, they're big numbers. But what he's looking at is $3.1 billion for public schools overall. $1.1 billion of that in special ed to raise that reimbursement rate to 60%, which school districts literally all over the state, every single school district is looking for that. Because remember, what, 90% of the school districts this year went to referendum. That is a trend that we need to get after. Now, $856 million go to support the UW system. Again, because they have been treading water, putting off major improvements and major investments, waiting for that additional help. $60 million or so goes as an investment into our Wisconsin Technical College system, which is one of the best in the country. So that's how it spreads mm-hmm. out. It gets us, you know, pre-K and beyond to 12, then it gets us post high school, picks up the technical college. If you read through the thousands of pages of budget, there's some dollars also investing in career clubs, career tracking activities at the high school level. So more funding for things like FFA, DECA, the, you know, marketing association, finance, you know, so that kids in the high school level, because I am convinced with our high schools, you know, maximizing that experience sets you up for all sorts of success post-high school, whatever direction you choose. Mm-hmm. So I think, again, prudent investment, listening to our students and listening to our teachers saying, you know, these are the tools. I am convinced when we give kids competitive reading, math, and communication skills, career-wise, we can put that student anywhere post-high school.
Well, it does have to start early and continue through their entire educational process. K through 12 is a requirement. Everybody's got to go.
Yep.
we educate every kid in that age group.
Yep.
Post high school, it gets a little nebulous. Give us your thoughts about what the governor wants to commit to the UW and some of the post-secondary.
And this is where you catch a freshman still coming up on the learning curve. I know that statewide there is a need for some certain amount of capital investment, but they have been operating under various sorts of tuition freezes as well as salary freezes. So just for fun, I had the privilege of teaching at UW-Whitewater for over 25 years. I will tell you, and this is not a complaint and certainly not, you know, my motivation for teaching, my stipend per course did not change that 25 years.
Wow.
Okay? I mean, just for perspective, yep. Mm-hmm. Right? And again, not a complaint. Best job ever to get to teach, you know, college freshmen through seniors. Wouldn't trade it for anything, but that tells you something, correct? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was considered, you know, to use a terrible term maybe, but, you know, a cheap date because thankfully for my – with my spouse, I didn't need to tap into insurance.
Sure.
Okay?
Yep.
So that's not the case for the vast majority.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
But that tells you something. It wasn't that they didn't think I was worth a raise. Just didn't have it.
Right? Inside the UW system – The overall average, it says, for staff getting paid is something like $87,000, which is reasonable these days, I think. But if you go in and you look at the salaries, and it's a public institution, it's paid for with some taxpayer dollars, it's public record. And so I was perusing that the other day. The top 100 people.
Yeah.
There's no one on there that earns less than $250,000. And when you get into like the top 20, we're talking millions. You know, the football coach and the athletic director and those guys. And I think a lot of people may look at that and go, well, okay, education we get, but wow, do we have to spend that kind of money in some of these other non-academic areas?
Yeah. You know, and without digging through the numbers, I can't really comment on that. What I do know is, you know, we got a letter from a constituent quite sad about the streaming options for UW sports.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a huge I like all sports. I do watch. We were one of those families that has a couple different streaming channels. Just, you know, got to have March Madness, got to have, you know, all those sorts of things, right? So I really empathize with this person. However, I reached out to the UW system and I said, so tell me about, you know, how is this driven? Because their concern, the constituent's concern was, hey, you know, what are my tax dollars doing if I can't tune into a UW game? Zero tax dollars go towards UW athletics.
All self-supported.
All self-supported.
Okay.
So just to, you know, and what I tell you, Tim, I have so much learning to do, but one of the most amazing, fascinating pieces I'm learning so far is all of the interconnected agencies within the state government, the legislative bureau, the fiscal bureau, all of these, like, you know, groups of tremendous analysts, researchers, and experts, you know, that help you find these details, research any question you can come up with. So now, you know, in my spare time, which is not much, I try to think of questions to stump them just because. No, I don't want to waste any resources or their time, but certainly
the deeper
impressive
questions and then more the superficial ones, which are what we get in news sound bites a lot of times.
So. Correct.
It's why I like doing this. get a little deeper into some of that stuff.
Yeah.
44th Assembly District Representative Ann Rowe, 44th Assembly District is basically Janesville, for those of you who
2/3 of Janesville and townships to the west, 8 of them, and plus the village of Footville.
So she is here in the studio. If you have a question, you can pop that in here at 608-752-4000. I'm sure Ann would be glad to take that or talk with you. We will be right back after a quick commercial timeout on your talk show on WCLO.
I just smiled, and we talked about some old times, and we drank ourselves some beers, still crazy after all these.
Seniors, did you know that long-term health care could cost you your entire life savings? Without proper planning, all the assets you've spent a lifetime building could be wiped out by a nursing home before you even realize it. Hi, I'm Scott Moen, founder of Elder Life Group and your host of Elder Life Radio on WCLO.
And I'm attorney Douglas Lay, founder of Elder Advisors Law in Janesville. Have you heard that you have to pretty much spend all of your assets before you qualify for Medicaid? Have you heard that they can take your home, that they can take your farm? Well, I'm here to tell you that it doesn't have to be that way. We can help you protect your stuff. You don't have to go broke in a nursing home. You can protect your hard-earned assets. For more information, go to elderadvisorslaw.com or give us a call at 608-371-7207. That's Elder Advisors Law.
And be sure to tune in to Elder Life Radio this Saturday on WCLO.
The Kittleson Law Firm in Monroe and Janesville is a nationally certified elder law firm that specializes in trusts, estates, and legal divestment of assets to avoid paying a nursing home. At the Kittleson Law Firm, we don't hide assets. We retain assets for your spouse and family. The Kittleson Law Firm can help even if your loved one is already in a nursing home. We are the Kittleson Law Firm, your elder law experts, helping preserve family legacies since 1946.
Lane's Farm and Fleet Spring Workwear event is going on now, and we have a great selection of quality workwear styles at unbeatable prices. Like 30% off men's work and sport pocket tees, $10.49 each. Save $10 on Ariat Rebar Made Tough work pants. New at Blaine's, men's brunch workwear apparel, 25% off. Plus, earn $30 in Carhartt bucks for every $125 spent on Carhartt gear. We've got the value you need to do things your way. Blaine's Farm and Fleet. Be an original.
Deals in every aisle this weekend during Hy-Vee's three-day sale. Now through Sunday, deals everywhere. Like Hy-Vee Midwest Pork Boneless Top Loin Chops, 88 cents. Smithfield Deli Shaved Ham, $3.99 a pound. Farmland Bacon is $3.97, and Hormel Bone-In Pork Shoulder Roast is only $1.88 a pound. These and many other fantastic deals during Hy-Vee's three-day sale, now through Sunday, at your Janesville Hy-Vee.
Hey, guess what time it is?
It's Thermal Time.
Well, I think you're referencing a Christmas movie, so no. It's Tacoma Time at Hesser Toyota. Hey, it's Shelton here from Hesser Toyota. Here to say that if you've been thinking about a new truck, you're in luck. All of our 2024 Tacomas are marked down to invoice. If you're hearing this, it means we still have Tacomas on our lot that are priced to move.
Do they have a turbo?
Funny you say that. They actually do. Come see us at Hesser Toyota. No games, no gimmicks, no kidding.
For news every morning, trust WCLO.
Oh, it informs me, totally.
And when you want to talk about what you've heard, it's your talk show.
Awesome talk in the morning.
From WCLO, Janesville, Beloit.
That's Little Richard.
Little Richard.
With Miss Anna.
Is it his birthday?
No, the name of the song is Miss Anne.
Oh, Miss Anne. Okay.
Genius.
I see, sometimes the obvious escapes me. I just can't help it. Andrew in the studio, 608-752-4000. You want to get a question in, feel free. If she doesn't know the answer, she'll make one up. No, you'll look it up. I know you
will.
But I want to talk about child care part of the budget.
Okay.
I, as a former parent and someone who, you know, we struggled with that when we had kids at home. I think everybody does to some degree. There's no big course that you take before you decide to start a family that tells you all these things you should consider and make sure you're ready for it. And then, blam, the baby's there and and all of a sudden you're becoming very inventive in a lot of ways. But I also know that things have changed incredibly from what they were like when we were at, as far as the ratio of how much of your take-home pay it costs for child care. We were fortunate back then in basically the 90s, that it was manageable. Child care workers weren't making much, and that was part of the problem. And so as we tried to correct that, we got here. But now you're to a standpoint where, as I said to Senator Spreitzer yesterday, I said, my brain can't help but wonder, well, wait a minute. you know, we get a lot of people out there now, a lot of families out there that sit and make the choice, do I quit my job and take care of my own kids because I'm basically working for nothing or next to nothing by the time I pay the child care bill? And once you pull these people out of the workforce, they are not generating tax revenue, and they are, and so then they might need assistance in some way. And I have no idea how to vet that all out, but it seems to me that, you know, it's a compounding problem that's not just about an individual family. You know, you should be able to take care of your kids. It's a big statewide impact. Yes. So as we look at support for child care in the budget, we need to do something, I think. And I don't know what that, whether it's a child care tax credit or support to, you know, grants to child care centers or whatever it is. What are your thoughts based on the system? Because the system that exists right now is still largely a pre-COVID whatever system that's right out there.
Oh, yeah.
You've got great organizations and you've got independent child care centers, but that's kind of it. And they're either full or they're really expensive.
Or both.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think your word compounding is key. And I think it is also just an enormous, you know, think of the most multi-pronged, you know, sort of tool you can imagine. Because, and I'll shift us back to education. So, you know, we need trained professional child care providers. Mm-hmm. That is not an easy or cheap endeavor, right? No. So certainly calls for some post-high school training, apprenticing, you know, shadowing, so forth, making sure you got all the tools you need for all our small friends. And, you know, so you have that component. You have the fact that wages in so many career industries have not kept up with inflation. So now you have families or single parents who are struggling to make sure that they can cover, you know, what you just mentioned, living expenses, food, transportation, all of those key items to keeping you as an engaged and participating person in community or the workforce. And those same things affect all the child care providers. So if they are in a jam, in order to hire more people, they need more money. If they charge more money, they're going to price out, you know, a huge percentage of their clientele. I was just at a press conference with a lot of colleagues, and the focus was on child care provider businesses and the real challenges they face. They get very creative. They try to create scholarships. They have families who can maybe afford a bit more, so they pay into a little fund to help some other families. You know, so they are always on the lookout for creative solutions that, you know, encourage more people to get the professional, accessible care they need so that they can pursue their jobs and be, you know, be functioning in their careers. Business owners need it. They need their employees. And child care, you know, that first year that a child goes back to school, I think with our daughter Catherine, we probably, she missed like 4 Mondays in a row with a disease of the week, you know, whatever cold virus was going around. And that says a lot. Her dad, yep. You know, my husband is a pediatrician. So if you can get him sick, that is impressive, right? So those challenges, Tim. So what the governor is looking at is investing $500 million dollars of this budget into lowering child care costs. And again, it's a prudent amount. We probably need more. And, you know, it's going back to those child care providers. It's being systematic as far as how those funds are distributed and looking at where can we get the most bang for our buck as far as, you know, where does an infusion of funds make the most sense to you know, address that compounding issue. And so there has to be a strategic approach to getting that. But again, we're playing catch-up. And playing catch-up means you don't get the luxury of being as proactive as I would like.
Yeah. When it comes to, again, in the grand scheme of things, I think you're probably right, $500 million is, it's a lot of money, but you know,
it's a lot of money.
I don't know how many kids are in daycare, but I'm guessing it's quite a few. You know, and you start to do that math out, it doesn't take long to spend that kind of money.
Well, and the pressure it's putting on, you know, relatives of the family, whether that's grandparents or aunts and uncles or so forth, you know, to absorb some of the weight of that child care. Well, now we have an aging population, and that it's not as easy when you're in your 70s chasing a two-year-old as it, you know, might once have been or ever. So the pressure that that's exerting from the other end, you know, again, that multi-pronged issue is a thorny one.
Do you think there's room here to start looking at this new phrase that I hear all the time, public-private partnership type stuff?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, the state gives money to the Milwaukee Bucks to build a new stadium in the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. Couldn't we give grants to Hy-Vee and Farm and Fleet and Target to put child care centers? You know, there's a break-even point where that makes sense or it doesn't, based on your number of employees, obviously. But you know,
well, you get back to the same problem of wages, of training. So, you know, creating a larger pool of trained, you know, credited professionals in that care industry. And it seems to me, Tim, so I'm channeling my inner Sue Conley, my predecessor, but it seems to me that she was successful in assembling, and I have to go back and check, and I'll be happy to, but with the guidance of Forward Janesville and some other agencies, I believe the Y here, Boys and Girls Club, you know, until we've encountered our latest crisis at the federal level, there had been proactive talk and strategy, just as a community, as a county, you know, area, what we could be doing, looking at public-private partnerships. So I'm happy to dig back into that and go back and revisit where those roundtable discussions.
I just think it's as we've talked, it's
reasonable.
This is one that it benefits employers. It benefits employees.
Right?
It's probably one of the most far-reaching discussion points as it relates to what the budget should or shouldn't fund, even more so in certain ways than actual public education system, because it touches so many other facets.
Right. And, you know, and I always tell people, whether or not they have children themselves in the district or relatives in the district or relatives that are in the child care sort of market, so to speak, looking for help, all those things affect every facet of our lives as community members, whether or not you have a direct tie or not. You know, whether Menards is fully staffed or whether, you know, people are making change for you or helping you out in your, you know, care facility or whatever. Those, every single facet is affected by whether or not somebody has access to childcare or whatever they need. You know, look at our firefighters and affordable housing. They don't have choices here in Janesville. Now we're working at it from all ends to make that a different state. But you know, I always push back at people who are like, oh, I don't have that, or I'm not affected by that, or I'm not old, or I'm not. Oh no, we're all affected. And I think I try to keep bringing that awareness around that this is why these decisions are important. And just because you don't see an immediate, you know, impact doesn't mean that you don't benefit from these investments.
You mentioned the uncertainty of things going on at the federal level, and there's a lot of that right now. Someone just texted and said, should the Department of Education be ended federally? The question being, I guess, obviously, are states more equipped to deal with their own issues and whatever than the feds? Obviously, one would hope that then the feds would be taking that portion of tax dollars away from states, and states would be able to do with it what they felt was best. What's your thought?
We need the Department of Education.
Okay.
So, you know, for that effort at standardizing, for that effort to make sure that, you know, some states are more equipped than others. Some states have different challenges than others. The level of, you know, and it, you know, so of our state budget, 32% is funded with federal funds, not just education, but the state budget. So one third of our budget comes from federal funds. And given the relative chaos, and I would encourage everyone to reach out to their federal representative mm-hmm. on that one, Congressman Brian Stile, if you're not aware, for those in this area, that will have, you know, catastrophic effects on every state budget in our country if they pursue the path they're on. So, no, I would push back. We need the Department of Education. And to be clear, you know, everyone in their households, everyone in their personal budgets, can we make improvements? Always. And we should always have an eye towards that. Simply going in, you know, and breaking things, as we all know, makes one larger mess and is not effective towards, you know, taking care of people, which I do believe is the primary function of government.
The intent of your words there is registering fine with me, but there comes a point, I think, when I ask, at what point are we teaching people that you don't have to be self-sufficient anymore?
Oh, Tim, come on.
No, I'm serious. Under the current proposal, if we solve the child care thing, and I'm not saying there's not a problem. I admit there's a problem, but you know, we'll take care of that, so you don't have to figure it out in your own home budget. We'll figure that out for you. We're going to pay for your kids' breakfast. We're going to pay for your kids' lunch. We're going to, if you're in a low income job, we're going to give you a tax credit. Even if you don't work, you're going to get a tax refund. At what point are we saying there is no personal responsibility anymore?
Oh, I don't think that says that at all. Because go back to my example. You know, when I worked in helping little kids, the second graders, the, you know, kindergartners, mm-hmm. third graders, and so forth. And I will repeat this again. No child wakes up in the morning choosing to be the naughty kid or the kid that needs stuff. Absolutely no one. And I will apply that to adults. There, you know, the exceptions might be few and far between, but no adult wants to wake up one day and be like, you know, gosh, I really just want to, you know, freeload. No, I categorically disagree with you on that. And I don't think that teaches, you know, that you don't have to be accountable. Not at all. But when the playing field is not level, and you can't get ahead, you can't afford a tornado that comes through and it's $1,000 mm-hmm. deductible and you don't have $1,000 in your pocket. And now we're going to sit back.
But my question is a little deeper than that. Why don't you have $1,000 in your pocket? I mean, when my basement flooded, I was not happy about it. And I had the same problem everybody else had.
Right.
Insurance company looked at you and went,
right.
And so, but.
But you made it.
I budgeted across many years or whatever to get to the point where there's funds to do it. I worked two jobs for a majority of my life. I did what was necessary, and I didn't do it at the expense of the taxpayers of Wisconsin.
And those options are not available to everyone. And, you know, we as a society, as a government, have a sworn duty to take care of the people in our communities. Now, that does not mean, you know, not holding them accountable, not working with them towards their goals of self-sustained, you know, careers and pathways. Everybody wants that. I mean, you have to believe, and I think that's what drives me to public service. I do believe that at the end of the day, everybody would like that opportunity. Some are going to need a little more help and resources to get, you know, the basic necessities covered so that they can engage.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that. And any time, you know, and I've known you for years, you know I respect you, I hear judgment. And it's like, well, if you're poor, you did something wrong. No, you didn't. You know, generational poverty happens. Catastrophic illness happens. Really crappy luck happens. So I don't hold judgment, you know.
And don't misunderstand me. I'm all behind the idea of Christian charity and helping those in need and doing that kind of thing. But we do have situations where we now make it almost impossible for people to get out of this because there's cliffs, there's things that are built into the system that, in my opinion, are kind of messed up that say, well, okay, I've fallen, I'm getting back up. I needed the SNAP benefits for a while. I needed the rent benefits for a while. And now I have the opportunity to get this job, which has some growth potential, but it's going to start at a buck more an hour than, you know, my household is basically bringing right now. It's stupid for me to take it because they're going to cut my state benefits. And so this is, I'm advocating for state benefits in this regard, right, but in a different way than we have right. them structured right now.
And I flat out don't see the evidence of that. Now, there might be a case by case, you might, you know, anecdotally here and there within various communities, you're hearing that, but I just don't see and haven't been exposed to the evidence and data supporting that sort of, you know, characterization of our struggling workforce. I haven't seen it. I have,
personally, in running low-income apartment properties in a former part of my life. And it's not, these aren't bad people. They're just trying to solve a math problem.
Right.
And the math problem says, well, it's stupid for me to have to try and deal with childcare and whatever and go to work whatever when I can get the stuff I'm getting. And they're right. I mean, from a financial standpoint, why would you? And I just think that with all the idea that we should increase all the spending to all these things, there doesn't seem to be another look back to say, are we as a state doing this smartly, efficiently? Are we sometimes making it more difficult for people to, for instance, because once the money is gone, it's gone out of your budget. If you right now are making $150,000 a year and you figure that it's going to cost you $60 a week to feed your kids breakfast and lunch, and suddenly you don't need to because the state taxpayers are going to pay it, you're going to find another place for that $60 to go. You're not going to put it in the bank.
Is there a question in there, Tim?
Well, why are we doing it is my question. Why would we advance something like that that is ultimately going to cost more to the school systems? And if it increases taxes, it's going to increase taxes for everybody, including those people who you're trying to help that are on the low end of the income scale.
Well, it would appear to me, Tim, that you were answering your own questions, but I will tell you that in the school district of Janesville, we do provide free breakfast for everyone. Mm-hmm. So we're already ahead of the curve, and we already see improvements and results from that.
Where are the improvements? Janesville ranked third, I think.
Snapshot. So, you know,
it's what you have. It's the only. I'm just using the measuring stick the state is giving me. I mean, give me more measuring sticks, and I'm happy to consider them.
But. Well, get into every classroom, and you're going to see the improvements. The school board's meeting from what day are we on here? Friday. So Tuesday of this week, they got a great update about the improvements and the advances they're seeing since that report card snapshot. So they are excited, and they are talking data and evidence and happy to share it with you. I'm sure you'll have folks from the mm-hmm. school district on to talk about it and to make a difference. So, you know, I think you and I are on philosophical different ends of the spectrum as far as how we see proactive investment into our communities. And what I want to reiterate is that people, you know, in general, do not choose to struggle. If they can avoid that and be self-sustaining, they would like that. There are tremendous hoops and things put in place by design to make sure that the dollars are going towards the right kinds of things and the right kinds of situations, and I'm confident that we do that. Is there room for improvement? Always. But in our budget, you know, I'm going to reiterate this because of, you know, the difficulty on the other side of the aisle, we're playing catch up. And these things have been systemically underfunded And that puts us in a jam. So if we're trying to catch up, level that playing field so that, you know, ultimately our focus isn't on fixing all the time, but on lifting and moving forward, I think we have a better chance. Now, I will just interject here that Senator Mark Spitzer and Representative Breanne Brown and I are having listening sessions about about Governor Evers' budget. That those are going to be two Mondays, so Monday, March 10th and Monday, March 24th at 6 p.m. at Hedberg Public Library. And I will tell you from my college teaching days, office hours, which I consider listening sessions to be, are way more fun when people come. So I would really encourage people to bring their questions, their experiences. I'm sure that, you know, we'll kind of delve into what we do know at that time, maybe about some of the federal actions. But I want to be clear with people with respect to the federal budget. And back to your question about Department of Education and all the rumbles and so forth. You know, our president and his entourage are contemplating, you know, what, a $4.5 trillion tax cut. And they are shopping right now to pay for that tax cut, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to go after Medicaid. And when people say, oh, I'm not on Medicaid.
On what do you base that comment?
From what they have done already, from sort of the test balloon they sent up, I believe, the first week after inauguration for him, they stopped payment on a whole bunch of social services and federally funded programs, just to see. Right?
That was the whole pausing of all the grant thing.
And then it was supposedly, quote unquote, restarted. News is it hasn't been, not across the board. And they have made it very clear that Medicaid is one of the things they're contemplating. They're not going to touch Medicare because, oof, you know, they might lose a few voters there. But Medicaid, oh. So Medicaid, I need people to understand that Medicaid affects kids, families, veterans, seniors.
Yeah, it does.
And they're looking for a $2 trillion cut in Medicaid. The immediate effect on our state budget would be $28 billion just like that we would have to fund today. Today. Like not next year's biennium budget, which is a two-year budget.
Mm-hmm.
No, today. We would have to start figuring out how to make sure those individuals have their money.
All right.
People, yeah.
We're running out of time.
How can that be?
Sorry, but with it,
you don't have
it happens.
Come on.
I need to take a quick break. We're going to come back. I'm going to give you 2 minutes to sum up. Sort of like a debate, even though this, I don't think this was a debate, but it was a good discussion. But kind of where we go, where you go, where you'd like to see things go, what you'd like to see JFC leave in as opposed to what they'll likely take out, some of that kind of stuff. So we'll be right back with Ann Rowe right after this on WCLO.
While they while away the hours in their ivory towers till they're covered up with flowers.
Hello? Tired of trying to find someone to help you in the big box stores? Someone who actually knows flooring? Relax. Carpet Mart has you covered. With the largest flooring inventory in the area, special prices on cash and carry projects, free estimates, and people who know flooring and offer expert advice to make your dreams a reality. Carpet Mart, for everything floors.
Carpet Mart, Milton Avenue, Janesville. Locally owned and operated for over 50 years. Quality flooring backed by service you can stand on.
The Janesville Noon Rotary Club shines a spotlight on excellence. Join them in celebrating the February Noon Rotary Students of the Month. Julia Gravert and Grace Zaz from Craig High School. Jack Cruiser and Lily Ryan from Parker High School. Madison Businger and Thomas Wallace from Milton High School. These extraordinary young minds exhibit outstanding achievements and leadership in their communities. Congratulations from the Janesville Noon Rotary Club to these incredible students who embody the spirit of excellence, making a positive impact in our communities.
Water quality is in the news. Lead, nitrates, iron, sulfur, arsenic. Not satisfied with the taste of your drinking water? Contact the water experts serving Rock County for almost 70 years. E&D Waterworks can provide carbon filtration, reverse osmosis, or bottled water in coolers to give you a refreshing drink of water. Systems can be rented with a purchase option. Call 752-4718 to get answers to your questions about water. E&D Waterworks. If water runs to it or through it, we do it.
When you're looking for a vehicle that's stylish, safe, and loaded with innovative technology, it's time to start your search at Frank Boucher Volkswagen of Janesville. Kick off the new year and go bold. Drive confidently and get ready to fall in love with a new Volkswagen from Boucher. This month, take advantage of 0% APR for 60 months or a $2,500 customer bonus on the 2024 VW Tiguan SE all-wheel drive, or receive 3.9% APR for 60 months or a $2,000 customer bonus on the 2025 VW Atlas SE. Visit them at 4211 Milton Avenue in Janesville or anytime online at janesvillevw.com. At Boucher, they ride with you every mile. 3.9% APR for 60 months equals $1,837 per 1,000 borrowed to qualified credit. Must finance through VW FS or $3,529 off MSRP includes $2,000 retail customer bonus. Bonus cannot be combined with any other offer. Manufacturer suggested retail price may not reflect the actual sale price. Price excludes tax, title, license, and service fee. Expires 2/28/25.
Hy-Vee in Janesville is proud to announce the Hy-Vee High School Team of the Month, the Janesville Parker Wrestling Team, coached by Shane Fleming. The Vikings capped off the regular season by completing the sweep of the Big 8 Dual Meet Championship and the conference tournament title. The Vikings are led by state-ranked wrestlers Cody Slater and Carter Wesley, and they advance to the Division I Team Sectionals. Hy-Vee will select a High School Team of the Month all season long. Congratulations to the Janesville Parker Wrestling Team on being named this month's Hy-Vee High School Team of the Month.
Join us Friday, February 28th for an unforgettable evening when the Young in Whitewater welcomes piano star Jim Brickman and his Hits Live Tour. International superstar Jim Brickman performs at the Young, playing timeless melodies and heartfelt lyrics from a career spanning three decades. Contemporary music doesn't get any better than this. Experience the best-selling solo pianist of our time, Jim Brickman, at the Young in Whitewater, Friday, February 28th at 7 p.m. Find tickets and information at theyoungwhitewater.com.
Is pain slowing you down? As the area's orthopedic leader, Mercy Health can help you move freely again. Whether it's a sports injury, arthritis, joint replacement, or advanced treatments for chronic pain, our team is here for you every step of the way. With a comprehensive range of services, we'll help you get back to the things you love. Don't let pain hold you back. Make an appointment with a Mercy Health orthopedic specialist today. Mercy Health, a passion for making lives better.
Winter weather.
Heavy snow, blizzard conditions.
For the latest forecast and event closings.
The airport's closed indefinitely.
Stay with the one station that brings you all the winter weather information.
My way of finding out what's going on.
WCLO, Janesville, Beloit.
We wiped out an hour in a really short, well, yes, it was the same amount of time as it would, normally would have been, but it always feels like it goes
too fast.
Really fast. And I always look at that, and I look at it as a compressed hour, and I think we just scratched the surface conversation and noodling on how to do things and reasons for doing things. And then you think most people get their impressions of it with a passing headline and whatever, It's so hard to get a grip on some of these things because they are so far-ranging and far-reaching.
Yeah.
And I think the focus is right to a degree in that, you know, somewhere in here, the kids are going to be key to the, if we can figure it out for them.
Yep.
It's going to take us a generation, but we can kind of right the ship here.
Yep. Those are our future leaders. So, you know, we want to make sure that they have choices. So you asked me to sum up, you know, sort of everything in a minute and a half. So here's what I believe in. I believe budgets are roadmaps. I believe budgets are the clearest indicator to anyone looking of a person or an entities like the state of Wisconsin, our governor, our Democratic legislature. It is an indicator of our priorities. Now, there's going to be push and shove and tweaking and so forth. I'm hopeful, but I am not. I am a realist. I know that the folks across the aisle are on a mission to tear down, driven essentially by one personality. And that is unfortunate because it is not serving all of the people of Wisconsin. So, you know, the budget is a roadmap. The investment, the proactive investment in all things sort of kid or child related, that weaves its fingers into small businesses, big businesses. It weaves itself into education, mental health, healthcare. You know, those are our sort of primary drivers of our communities. And when we get some of those pieces right or better or improved, we're going to see improvement as a community. And I want to stress that, you know, our function is to serve everyone. Wherever you find yourself on, you know, on that political spectrum, the mission is the same. And the mission, as I understand mine, is to be a good steward of those funds, to be a good advocate for what's important. I need people to come to our listening sessions on March 10th and 24th. If you can't make those, reach out to our office. Or if your group is meeting and you want somebody to come in and chat, these are listening sessions. They are, you know, constructive conversations about how we can serve our communities and how we can do better, you know, across the board. So I'm grateful for our conversations, Tim. You always make me think,
and,
you know.
And that's what it should be about.
Absolutely. And I look forward to continuing those.
We'll see you in a month or so.
And I look forward to it.
Until then, be well, and we'll see you soon. And that's going to wrap it this hour. Biff next on WCLO, Janesville, Beloit.